Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 173rd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, and you can listen to this program on MTRRadio.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss anything you'd like. And as always, you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities as much as I can. And my goodness, what has been going on here in the reentry draft of Major League Soccer? A lot of great pickups, a lot of big interesting trades, obviously a lot of re-signings, and then, of course, head coaches being signed or being fired. Obviously, a lot of interesting things going on here, and we haven't even made it yet to New Year's Eve with all this movement going on in Major League Soccer. And, of course, we talk about some great moves here. Congratulations to Carl Robinson, who is, of course, the brand-new head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps after Martin Rennie was officially let go. And at the same time, just a lot of big pickups going on here. Of course, some deals, some trades. We got, of course, Kenny Cooper being picked up by the Seattle Sounders. And you know what that meant? It meant that Eddie Johnson's no longer in Seattle. He's no longer in the Pacific Northwest. He was picked up or at least traded to D.C. United for allocation money. And, of course, other big signings as well coming along here. Toronto FC picking up. It sounds like they're going to bring over Jermaine Defoe officially, and that's probably a big pickup for Toronto. Gilberto, of course, a big DP signing here by Tim Leiwicki in Toronto FC, bringing him over from South America. You know, this is going to be one of those things where it's going to be very, very interesting going on here. And you know what? This offseason is still not done yet, of course. Still some pickups that could be made, might be made. You never know what's going on here. Of course, Real Salt Lake, unfortunately, losing not so much players, more of a coaching staff, really. Of course, we all know what happened. Jason Kreis will take the year off as he'll be managing New York City FC for the 2015 season. And at the same time, you also have to say they're losing coaches left and right here. C.J. Brown is going to now be part of the coaching ranks, or at least in the over in Chicago for the Fire. It goes back to Chicago where he was a player. Congratulations to C.J. Brown. And as we keep on going here, it's just very interesting and very wonderful to see what's been going on in Major League Soccer with all these deals and with all these coach hirings and everything else that's going on. And at the same time, Jurgen Klinsmann signs a new 4-year deal with U.S. Soccer to remain with the national team going into the next cycle. So U.S. Soccer will have Jurgen Klinsmann for Russia 2018 in that cycle in the next 4 years. That's pretty darn good. Of course, you know, the contract was signed before we can even kick the ball over down in Brazil. That is if these stadiums will be completed, because once again, the workers of these World Cup stadiums, especially now in the Amazon, Manaus, where the U.S. is going to play their second Group G game, the workers have walked off. They have walked off. It's been scary for what's been going on down in Brazil with, of course, one of the newer stadiums with the roof collapse or the crane collapse that killed a couple of people, unfortunately, and thankfully not many more were killed. We're hearing reports of what's going on. It's just been scary. It's just been terrible. It's been horrible. And you know what? We really hope, as much as I would love to see Brazil, you know, kick off this World Cup in style, we have to ask the question, is it going to be safe enough for the fans and the players and the people who represent our countries, you know, media members as well? You know, is there going to be a scary situation? We can't have this. I really do hope that they figure things out down in Brazil, and I really hope they figure it out quickly, because, you know, it would be a shame that all these millions of dollars were spent to create stadiums that might not be ready for the World Cup itself. And that could be a major disaster, and that means FIFA's going to have to reshuffle the calendar a bit, not so much in times and dates or stuff like that, but at least suitable stadium conditions. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if all the stadiums are not ready. You're not saying I want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. I'd like to have all World Cup stadiums ready to go, ready to be, you know, good and everything. But still, we have to see what's going to happen. And as we talk here, having some difficulties, maybe, hopefully not, but hopefully we'll get this stuff going on, and maybe we might have some issues here. But hopefully everything will be fine and everything will be okay as we keep on going here. And if we are not broadcasting, then let's hope everything will be going okay. But once again, everyone, this is the situation where, okay, good, we are. Never mind, and we are broadcasting, thank goodness. And also, ladies and gentlemen, as we discuss what's going on with all the situations here, you just have to talk. You just have to say that with this move by Jason Kreis going over to Real Salt, going from Real Salt Lake to New York City FC, coming up. You know, I would like to give some advice to Jason Kreis here, because obviously being in Salt Lake City, I'm not saying Salt Lake City media is weak or it's not strong enough to challenge Jason Kreis. Obviously they are. I mean, the people love the game in Salt Lake City and within the state of Utah. Obviously the people in Utah are definitely hard nose. Obviously, Denzel Esslinger is a guy who knows this club, you know, in and out. My good friend Chris Anger, of course, Mr. Taylor Fugit, as well as Wes Brown, and so many others that support Real Salt Lake. You know, this is a town that loves the game, that, you know, brings it. And once again, there's nothing here that I'm trying to embarrass or embellish, or let's just be honest, I'm not taking a shot here, because I know how good the fan base is over in Salt Lake City and within the state of Utah for the game here in the United States. But if I can just have a word with Jason Kreis, if I can get into his ear, I'd like to tell him something about New York City. New York, New York. And once again, this is not comparing. This is not complaining. This is not saying what or who is better than whom. But let's be honest, New York City is a different animal. New York City, Jason Kreis, is definitely a different animal than what you were probably used to. Not only will you get more newspaper writers, more television coverage, more of everything, the minute they smell fear, meaning the New York sports media, regardless of the popularity of the game, when they smell fear, they will go after you. Do you think that everything you've done for Salt Lake, while it's been well documented, and you have, in my opinion, you have basically surpassed everything that you've done for Real Salt Lake, and maybe it was time for you to try something different now. Maybe you've done all you could over there, and you've left a major impression with Real Salt Lake, but you are going to have one full year of nothing, one full year of absolutely nothing. You probably are going to be setting up, you know, expansion draft selections. Who's going to be available for you? When, you know, wondering if a designated player coming from Manchester City is going to be there for you. And yes, I will still say that you're going to get your designated players from Manchester City. You're not going to get them from anywhere else. But the point is this. This is a different animal, Jason. This is a different animal. And you have to say right now is this. You got to know, and you've got to learn what it's like to be a professional head coach, not just in soccer, but in all sports, baseball, basketball, football, hockey. You got to know how to definitely tame this city. Because if you're not going to do so, it will chew you up and it will spit you out. And this is why any player, as well as any coach, manager, who hasn't been through this in this city, you're going to learn a very fast and quick lesson. Because it will get you, whether you like it or not. Whether you think it's not going to bother you. It's going to let you, you're going to, the best have wilted under pressure playing for this city. And I understand you'll be in the ballpark. You'll be at Yankee Stadium for the first 3 years. Could be more depending on what the new mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, is going to do with those tax breaks that are not going to be, it sounds like he's not going to give them when Bloomberg gave it to him. You're going to have to know the city inside and out. Your practice facility, where are you going to practice? Because you can't practice at Yankee Stadium. There's baseball games that need to be played. Because don't forget, you need a practice facility. I don't know where you're going to find it. I don't know if Columbia University will allow you to practice by their college football stadium. I don't think the New York City Parks and Recreation is going to allow you to practice in the parks. Where are you going to build the practice facility? We'll wait and see what happens. You still got 2015, season to come. We've got 2014 to take care of first. And all I'm saying to you is this, Jason. Know the city well. Don't ignore it. Don't try to assume you know what's going on. Know the city. Learn the city. Because the last player, and I know you're a head coach now, but the last player to not feel comfortable here is former baseball superstar starting pitcher in Randy Johnson. He was going for his physical while a camera was catching him, kept his distance, filming Randy Johnson walking to the doctor's office to take his physical. And what does Randy Johnson do after being asked a question, a harmless question? He takes his big right hand and he covers the camera and he throws it and he just pushes it away, pushes the guy away and his camera away. And if you think that I'm BSing this, no, there's no BSing here. It definitely happened. You could probably YouTube it. But once again, you need to know how this city works. And if you ignore how this city works, I guarantee you, Jason Christ. This will be a very, very long tenure managing New York City FC. So let's see what happens. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have a great show for you tonight. Joining me later on at 8:30 Eastern Time, Darius Shahrzadi from Project Goal. He's been on the show before. We'll have him back on with an update of Project Goal and as well as a special thing that happened to him that I'm very proud of, knowing Mr. Shahrzadi for such a long period of time. Of course, Michael Lewis will be joining me around 8:45. We're going to recap the New York Red Bulls 2013 season as well as talk about Jurgen Klinsmann and the USA World Cup group as well. Before we have those gentlemen on, we're going to talk about this big issue here, of course, with the CONCACAF Champions League for the 2014-15 edition. And when we discuss something like this, you know, it's very important to know when these decisions are being made, how long the process took, and when were we informed about this. And for the last couple of months, you know, rumors were saying and stating, or the supposed rumors, that the U.S. Open Cup tournament was going to lose their CONCACAF Champions League spot due to the fact that DC United, who basically had a terrible 2013 MLS season, but found a way to get silverware in the U.S. Open Cup. And while many people were upset by this, and you know, I can understand where they're coming from, the point is I wasn't upset because, let's be honest, that's why in sports, when it comes to the game of soccer, or to the great game of football, these moments were bound to happen. And once again, sometimes the strong do not prevail. The weak will get a lucky chance. And DC United took advantage of it. They deserved winning the U.S. Open Cup and getting their CONCACAF Champions League spot because they did what they had to do. Round three of victory, round four of victory, quarterfinal victory, semifinal victory, championship final victory, five matches, and you go all the way in there. And that's what they deserve it, whether you guys like it or not. I understand why there's a problem, but to be honest, there's nothing you can do about it. So moving on with the situation, for the last couple of years, getting four entries into the CONCACAF Champions League, you would have to either A, win the U.S. Open Cup, B, win the Supporters' Shield, the regular season champions, and then, of course, C and D, the two MLS Cup finalists. You win the MLS Cup or you lose the MLS Cup as runners-up. And then you get drawn into the eight groups of three to go to the CONCACAF Champions League. And then the situation became a lot clearer when we found out that the Portland Timbers, who are the Western Conference champions of the 2013 season, were going to take the spot instead of Real Salt Lake as runners-up to Major League Soccer Cup. Now, as I understood this whole process, this proposal came throughout an 18-month period of how this was going to be done. And while I have to say that I'm not against the proposal, I'm not against this proposal of who will go to the CONCACAF Champions League in 2014-15, of course, starting off the group stage in 2014. The problem has been the timing of the announcement. At the same time, these rumors going back and forth of who was not going to go to the MLS, to the CONCACAF Champions League. And you have to say, right now, I am not in any disagreement on the changes, because I agree with it. What I do oppose to, and unfortunately you can't oppose it anymore because it's already happened, but the timing of when this was going to happen or the timing of the news about the switch is very poor. I have to say it's very, very poor. And you have to look, unfortunately, to Major League Soccer. I know that U.S. Soccer has to agree to this, and at the same time, they are the governing body of the sport, which means that when they get the proposal from Major League Soccer, U.S. Soccer now has to send that proposal to CONCACAF and to the CONCACAF Champions League Committee, and they have to approve it, which has already been approved. But once again, this news should have been informed to us, meaning not just the media people, but at the same time also to the supporters who are thinking they're going to the CONCACAF Champions League in Real Salt Lake. Now they find out that they're not going. And that is where I find it very, very sad and very distraught. Not too distraught, I'll be honest. But you feel bad for the people in Salt Lake who has been, you know, gearing up for this. They assumed they're ready to go. They assumed they're heading back to the CONCACAF Champions League. And now they've been replaced by the Portland Timbers. Because I can understand why I would probably assume that they wanted, you know, half of East and half of West and at least have a Western Conference team make it. But regardless, you know, regardless, Salt Lake was going to represent the Western side of the conference in MLS. It's neither here nor there, but still the point is that that was bound to happen. And many times, and if anyone in Portland is listening, as I've always said, this is not against Portland. This is not against Timbers supporters. It's not against the Timbers organization at all. Congratulations. You're going to the CONCACAF Champions League for the very first time. And good luck in whichever group you get drawn into, and you can advance straight into the knockout stage in 2015. But once again, news of this coming out was definitely poor. And the questions that will continue to be asked, why can't we have transparency here? Why? Why can't we have transparency when it comes to these types of matters? That's my only question. I mean, I understand you don't want to have problems. I understand you don't want to have these situations coming up and, you know, what we say is the law and all that stuff. Not want to say it that badly or anything like that, but the point is simple. We just want some clarity, and we just want to know, when has this proposal started? When can we expect this change to occur? Why haven't we heard about this from the league from the start of the 2013 season? You see, this is why people get angry and they get upset. Now, obviously, the people I've talked with, you know, from Salt Lake, you know, some of the supporters, or at least those I follow on Twitter, they've already accepted this demotion, that their side is not going to represent Major League Soccer or U.S. Soccer internationally in the International Cup competition. But once again, it's just really disheartening to see what's been going on about this topic. And once again, I didn't say anything about it until we got the full details and also getting what the reasons were for making the switch. I didn't have a problem with the proposal. If that's what they wanted to do, both Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer, to remove the MLS Cup runners-up spot to becoming, or at least a Western Conference or an Eastern Conference winner, that did not win the Supporters' Shield, then you know what? That's fine. And we're talking about the regular season, not the playoffs. The regular season. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with the proposal, but truth be told, Real Salt Lake should be allowed to enter the 2014-15 tournament, and then the team that wins their conference and not the Supporters' Shield should be allowed to go into the 2015-16 tournament. Because of the way the news was brought to our attention. It's not fair, and it's not right. Now, if you were informing us before the season got underway, then you know what? Then that's fine. We started a couple of weeks ago about how Major League Soccer, during Don Garber's State of the League address, finally showing some transparency, and I applauded him for that because that's what we need a league commissioner to do. We can't have everything to be secretive. I mean, if it's a simple information thing, inform the public, inform the people, because we'd like to know what the heck is going on. How come all of a sudden now Salt Lake is going to lose their spot? For what reason? And if this situation was going to be told by us during the preseason, the spring training, you see, this would have been a lot better. People would have understood. It's just been absolutely pathetic. And it's terrible. It's just terrible. I mean, I just want to see something that resembles not just transparency, but, you know, competence. Something so small, unfortunately, can blow up and become out of control. And we can't have that. And this is not just Major League Soccer, but all the leagues that are under the umbrella of U.S. club soccer. That's all I'm saying. I think that's all we want. And if we can't get that done, then everything falls apart. And this is all I've ever stressed for. It's all I've ever strived for. I just want to see everything happen, inform us properly, tell us what's going on. I can understand if the league wants to keep things to themselves, they want to keep it private, and that's fine. But we can't keep on assuming that we know what's going on, and then all of a sudden, here comes a change that just came out of nowhere. Well, when did this happen? Well, we don't know when this happened. It just recently happened now, I guess. And we can't have that. I would love to see a little more transparency within the league, informing the people on what changes will be made, why they're made, how it will be made, and what will happen next. I think that's all we're asking for. I think that's all we want to have, because, you know, we don't want Major League Soccer to fall apart. And we don't want Major League Soccer to be all the time negative. We don't want to be negative on Major League Soccer. Plain and simple. But hopefully, everything will be good, everything will be fine, and everything is going to be fruitful. And once again, congratulations to the Portland Timbers and their organization. Congratulations to the Timbers Army. You're going to the CONCACAF Champions League. For the supporters of Real Salt Lake, now I feel bad for you guys, but don't worry. Everything, look, just try and win a trophy, you know, Supporter Shield, Open Cup, or get back into the MLS Cup final, or try and win the Western Conference for next year and get back into the next tournament. That's all I can say. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's my first guest for tonight. A little later I scheduled him for, but that's okay. He is the gentleman who created Project Goal over in Providence, Rhode Island, in the Providence area of the state of Rhode Island. My good longtime friend Darius Shirzadi is joining me now. Darius, welcome back to the show, and thank you for coming on again.
Hey, Danny, how are you? Thanks a lot for inviting me to come on again.
No problem at all. Once again, just please, for those that are new to the show, that are not aware of your foundation, please inform us what Project Goal is once again.
Well, just short, it's an academic and life skills program disguised as a soccer program. So we use the sport and the power and passion for soccer through kids, inner city kids here in the Rhode Island area, and we use that to leverage them to do schoolwork, stay in school, graduate high school, stay out of crime, stay off the streets, hopefully teach them some life skills like discipline and accountability and responsibility, as well as trying to give them some employability skills as they get older, and hopefully get them to graduate high school and go on to higher education.
Oh, that's fantastic. And is there any other new graduates that have graduated to playing professional soccer in the States or overseas?
Well, we actually had at least one student of ours. It's still kind of in the works, and I guess it's kind of hush-hush, be selected for a reality show where they're taking kids who just haven't really had the opportunities presented to them to actually try out for a professional team over in, I believe it's England, that they're taking them and allow them basically to train and try out, I believe, with a number of different teams in the hopes that they get, you know, picked up by somebody. But these are kids, you know, that are not playing for, you know, some university. If they are playing for university, it's a not very well-known university like a junior college or a smaller Division III school. So they don't have really the opportunities to get really noticed or seen or have that type of opportunity to go overseas and try out for a team. So I know of at least one student that was selected for the process, but that's all I really know about it so far.
And FIFA has given you many, many grants, of course, FIFA recognizing Darius Shirzadi for his hard work and everyone else over at Project Goal as well. Have you earned another grant from FIFA yet, or you're still on your current one?
No, we actually got notified in November that we were selected for the third year in a row for a Football for Hope grant, so that'll be 3 years in a row for us since we joined the Street Football World Network, which is out of Berlin, Germany.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, out of curiosity, do you allow like trips, like you give the kids trips to Europe during maybe the Premier League season or the Bundesliga season, maybe a Champions League match if they get lucky, or it's just they stay stateside?
Yeah, no, they stay stateside. I mean, you know, if we were to encounter some kind of a wealthy investor or somebody who just has the kindness and in their heart and the money in their pockets to want to give an experience like that to some of our kids, probably something they would never encounter probably in their lifetime, which would be a good chance to actually have some of our kids encounter that kind of experience. But no, I mean, the closest we came to doing that was applying for a grant for FIFA to go to this upcoming year's World Cup in Brazil, because they were trying to get organizations from around the globe representing each confederation from programs like ours, but one from every basically confederation that would go, and we weren't selected this year. So, you know, if we want to have that opportunity, we would have to wait another, you know, 4 years.
Well, I only say this because I know you got a lot of pull over there, Darius. I know you can find a way to make magic happen, but somehow. but still, though,
I wish that would happen.
But still, though, Darius, you know, it's a wonderful thing you're doing over in Rhode Island and over in, especially in the Providence area. I know how hard you work to make that project goal to become something special, and I know it is. And apparently you've been recognized for that hard work. You were recently inducted into the New England Soccer Hall of Fame. You know, I have to say this. I mean, you know, that this was a great moment for you. I know that, but, you know, I haven't really spoken to you in a while, and I saw the picture of you on the podium talking after your introduction into the New England Soccer Hall of Fame. Please, how was that moment for you? And was your dad there, your mom, your sisters, anyone up there from the family to see you get inducted into that New England Soccer Hall of Fame? How was that moment for you, my friend?
Yeah, no, it was unexpected. I certainly had all of my family come and attend. I was inducted with the original college coaches at Brown University and Providence College, as well as, I guess, a longtime referee from this area, some administrators, and then also a former player with the Rhode Island Oceaneers who was very popular within the Colombian community up here named Juan Cano. I had actually not only my family there, but I had basically people that I have either played with or worked with through soccer throughout my entire life, from a small child to my college teammates and roommates, people I worked with and played for me with at the Rhode Island Stingrays in the old USL, as well as two different periods that I worked for the New England Revolution. So, as well as, you know, all of the Project Goal board members and staff attended. So between myself, actually, and Juan Cano, the player from Colombia, we probably had the highest number of people, representing us to come see us at the induction ceremony. So it was pretty special. The MC for the night was Doug Chapman. He has been a longtime writer for the Providence Journal covering, mostly soccer. He's not there anymore, but he was there when I was with the Stingrays, and he covered us, and he did a pregame box and post box score in the paper, which doesn't even happen anymore, even with the Revolution, as well as when I was with the Revolution. So it was nice to actually have him. He did kind of a special introduction for me because he's known me for so long. So it was just all around a very nice experience. I'd never been to one of the induction ceremonies, so I didn't really know what to expect. But, you know, it was nice to be recognized as a builder, basically, within the soccer community. Building Project Goal was obviously the main thing, I think, that kind of pushed me in there, as well as my other work with the Stingrays and the Revolution. But, to be recognized, basically, of doing something that's really doesn't exist anywhere else in New England, and it's pretty unique, obviously, within the soccer world as a whole.
Absolutely. You know, now in Major League Soccer, obviously training facilities are being created. Obviously the New York Red Bulls have one now. Chicago Fire is going to go and build one. I'm sure other MLS teams either are having one in the works, or they're probably still renting out college facilities, maybe local park facilities. Would that be the next goal if Project Goal does find a way to get a certain amount of income to build a facility for the kids to come in, not just to play, but also for the educational part as well?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's been a dream of ours, to have a facility that has classrooms and obviously soccer facilities. The ideal would be to have indoor and outdoor, but to have those classroom facilities and more or less be a hub for the kids that we service from around inner city Providence area, but it does require a very large amount of cash infusion and capital. Now all of a sudden, if you are owning and maintaining a facility of your own, that comes with a whole other set of problems with cost to maintain, electricity, maintenance fees, insurance, and then you're having to run a whole separate business because you have to generate income outside of when you're just running your program. So everything becomes that much bigger. You have to hire more full-time people. You know, you still have the same problems of transportation. So, you know, it presents a whole lot of problems. I know that I've spoken to other organizations around the country who actually do have their own facilities. And it's funny, the one thing they always keep telling you is, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you don't realize how much more you have to take on once you now have to manage a facility. Now you're not just managing a program and kids, but you're now having to run an entirely other business model. So I don't know if we're there yet. You know, obviously money cures all things. So we haven't certainly found that infusion of cash either, but it's certainly in the back of our minds, and it's definitely a dream of ours to have our own facilities.
Absolutely. Just out of curiosity, going back to the New England Soccer Hall of Fame, is there any former players from the NESL days, from the Minutemen or the Revolution, that have been retired or at least inducted into that New England Revolution? Excuse me, New England Soccer Hall of Fame. Any names that we're familiar with or aware of?
Yeah, I know within the last couple of years, you know, Mike Burns, Alexi Lawless, Jay Heaps, Steve Nichol, one of the guys that actually played for me, Chaka Daly, who was also the head coach at Providence College and is now the head coach at the University of Michigan. He was inducted the year previous to me. So, and he played for the Revolution as well. So, yeah, there's quite a few in there. Obviously, you know, the Revolution is fairly new compared to the Oceaneers and Minutemen. But actually, and I didn't even notice that the Hall of Fame has actually been inducting people since 1978. So there's actually quite a long list of people who have been inducted since then. But funny enough, there is no actual physical hall. It's actually much like Project Goal is looking for a facility. So is the Hall of Fame. So there's a location, but there's no real building to go visit.
Right. Well, hopefully for Project Goal and for the New England Soccer Hall of Fame, they'll finally have buildings to call their own, homes to call their own, and we'll see what happens. And if anyone's interested in following or looking up Darius Shahzadi's website, it's projectgoal.org. Go ahead and check it out. And if you are from the Providence, Rhode Island area, or at least from the New England area that listens to the show, go ahead and see if maybe you want to enroll your kid. Take it from me. This is the best guy to mentor and tutor your kid, education-wise and soccer-wise. I saw your dad at Mark's father's surprise birthday party at his in Connecticut. Boy, I got to tell you, he looks good. Your dad looks really good. I'm glad he's doing all right.
Yeah, I thank you very much for that. Yeah, he's still trying to run around and play soccer, so he's still trying to keep himself active.
Well, I'm glad he's keeping himself active, but I just think he should be a coach than a player now, even if it is the over 50 league.
Yeah, well, now he'll be 70 this weekend, so he's playing in the over 65 league.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow. That's pretty darn good. Yeah, my dad is actually over 72. I think he's like 73. Wow. That's just amazing stuff. But once again, everybody, if you are interested in what Darius Shahzadi does over in Rhode Island and Providence area, it's projectgoal.org. Please go ahead and take a look. And if you are in the Providence area, from the New England area, and you want to enroll your kid into Project Goal, go ahead and do so. Project Goal, G-O-A-L. .org. Darius, thank you again. You know I love promoting this great thing you're doing over there. And as always, anytime you want to come back, you are more than welcome to come back on the show. And please tell your dad and your mom again that I said hi.
Thank you very much, Danny. I appreciate it again inviting me on the show. And, you know, good luck to you and happy holidays to you and your family.
You too, Darius. Happy holidays to you and your family. Take care.
All right. Take care.
And that's Darius Shahzadi of ProjectGoal.org, once again on the outside of just around the Providence, Rhode Island area. And it's just a great thing he's done with that area, and hopefully maybe somewhere down the road some franchises will be going on. Now we're going to review the 2013 New York Red Bull season. Joining me right now, of course, the legendary writer is Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer and TroppyGoal.com. Michael, thanks for joining me, and happy holidays, sir.
Happy holidays, Daniel. My pleasure to be on once again.
No, it's always fantastic to have you on. And before we talk about the Red Bulls, I want to talk about some U.S. soccer things early on. What is your opinion about the group that they're in? Obviously, multiple group of deaths in the World Cup in Brazil next summer. Germany, Ghana, Portugal. I think the U.S. is looking for revenge on Germany and Ghana, but Portugal might want revenge on the U.S. How is your feeling of this group?
Well, obviously, one reason why it's called the Group of Death is because of the quality of the U.S. team. All four teams, given their history, recent history in the World Cup, they all made it out of the first round, the group stage in 2010. So that's going to make it difficult. Yes, the group is difficult, but it's not impossible for the U.S. not to make it out in one piece into the second round. I say that because this is the reason why Jurgen Klinsmann was hired, to bring the U.S. to a different level. Obviously, when he was hired in 2011, no one knew what the World Cup draw would be like. But if anyone can do it, he can. He's got the background, the gravitas, the fact that he's played for a World Cup champion and was also directed another national team, to a third-place finish in 2006. I just think this is a great moment for the United States to show that it's not just a good soccer country, but one of the best in the world. And what better way to demonstrate it at the World Cup?
Absolutely. They'll face Ghana first, and then a trip to the Amazon against Portugal. And if they find a way to get 4 to 6 points, they're going to face Germany possibly for top of the group towards the end of the group stage. I mean, there's a possibility, Michael, the U.S. could top the group if they play their cards right.
Well, you know, whoever thought that the United States would finish on the top of its group in 2010 against England, granted, England is not Germany. I don't fear them as much as I do the Germans, but the U.S. finished in first place with that marvelous, historic Landon Donovan goal. You know, sometimes with the World Cup, we look at history and we go, well, they've always done this. They've always beaten them. They should do that. Well, guess what? Things are decided on the field. And that's why there are things called upsets, and stranger things have happened. And if there's no other coach, maybe except for Mr. Lowe in Germany, who knows the German team as well as the U.S. coach, Jurgen Klinsmann, and I know he'll come up with a pretty decent game plan against his former countrymen. Whether or not the team can pull it off, we're just going to have to wait until June to see it. But, you know, like I said, it's a difficult group, but not impossible to get out of.
Absolutely. Jurgen Klinsmann has a new contract now, a new four-year deal. He'll be coaching the national team till the Russian World Cup in 2018. Do you think this is the right time for U.S. soccer and Jurgen Klinsmann to make this deal before they even get to Brazil? Or maybe this, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, this will not affect the national team at all because, once again, they haven't, you know, he's going to stay with the national team and he'll just continue on doing what he's doing all the way to Russia next year, or next 4 years, I should say.
I scratched my head when I heard about the contract being extended before the World Cup. Usually decisions like that are made after the World Cup, and I realized that there were some overtures from some other countries, perhaps for him to coach there, and maybe the powers that be at U.S. Soccer wanted to tie things up to make sure he wasn't going anywhere. I just think it's a rarity to see that happen. I always like this, you know, to keep at least the players on the seat of their pants a bit, trying to figure out who's going to be on the team. You just wonder, will there be any sort of complacency in the team because of having a coach? They know regardless what happens, he'll be back in, you know, for the next World Cup run. Yes, I know contracts are made to be broken, although I know that Klinsmann isn't one to sit on or rest on his laurels, and I don't think he's ever going to be considered a complacent person. Still, I guess from all of the way we've been brought up in sports, usually you get that brass ring after the World Cup, not necessarily before. I guess, again, like I said, we're going to have to wait until June or perhaps July to see how this plays out. Maybe it was the right way to go. We'll see. I'm still scratching my head a bit, though.
I agree with you. I was kind of scratching my head on it, too, but we'll have to wait and see if this is a positive or a negative once we get to Brazil in this coming June. Now we go to the Red Bull season in 2013. Michael, in 2003, Bob Bradley led the Metro Stars to the U.S. Open Cup final. They hosted the final, lost to Chicago, 1-0 over at the defunct Giants Stadium. 2008, Juan Carlos Osorio leads the team into improbable playoff run to get to the MLS Cup final for the New York Red Bulls in 2008. Unfortunately, lose to the Columbus Crew by a final of 3-1. Mike Petke, you know, I don't know how you felt about how he was going to do this past season. I admitted to myself, or at least I told others in the press room at Red Bull Arena, I thought he was going to make the playoffs and he was going to have a first-round exit, but I never thought we would ever see the first trophy at Red Bull Arena being the 2013 Supporters' Shield. Did you have a feeling maybe that I had, or did you think that he could actually make this special moment in this club's history, getting the first ever trophy for the New York Red Bull?
I wish I could say I had an inkling that this was going to happen. I think I had similar thoughts and concerns as you did. I think being a first-year coach in any sport, let alone soccer, the transition is different and difficult. And I thought the Red Bulls would find a way to get in as either the fourth or fifth place team. Pleasantly surprised at the way the team battled during part of the season where things are really on the line. I give Mike a lot of credit for, you know, making the team in his image, you know, playing a hard-nosed, gutsy type of style. Maybe not the prettiest style, but they were getting results. And they bought into him, which is not an easy thing to do, again, for a rookie coach. Yes, there's disappointment that the team did not get past the first round again, and that's something that has to be looked at for next year. But the fact that they did win the regular season title is simply amazing, because I don't think anyone saw that happening. And, you know, a result here or there, and Kansas City could have gotten it, or another team could have gotten it. So it's a pleasant surprise, something to build on. But I think we have to also remember, like it or not, in this country, teams will remember how they do in the playoffs, not what they do in the regular season. If that was the case, we would have gone home after October 27th.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I got to say, what besides the style of Petke, what did you see from him? Obviously, I know there are times you were able to make the training facility in Hanover, and there are times you weren't able to. But for the times you've seen him being so animated in his technical area, what is it about Mike Petke that just oozes this charm? I think I'll put it that way. The charm of Mike Petke that has gotten his guys to go out and perform the way they did last year?
Well, I think he's the real deal. I think we've seen this throughout his entire career. He's really cared about this team. And this isn't an act. I was there the night he was drafted by the Metro Stars way back in 1998, and he was sky high. And, you know, I had seen him, you know, develop from a rookie player to a veteran player to a rookie coach, and he's never lost that desire. And I think that's been the most important part of it. And I think, again, going back to what the team had seen in him, I think they caught on to that. You know, he just not only was very demanding of the team, but he was very demanding of himself. And he is a very passionate individual on and off the field. And without, again, repeating myself too much, the team bought into that. And I think that's one of the reasons why they went out and did what they did during the final 6 to 8 week stretch.
Do you think because of all this love for this club that he rooted for and played for and now coaching, well, the assistant coach after he retired, now the head coach, is this why? Do you think maybe Thierry Henry has shown all this respect for Mike?
Well, I think part of it might have come from that spat that they had after practice toward the stretch run. I mean, I think Mike did made a bold move, but I really think it was the only move he could have done, and that was bench Henry for the first half of the next game, basically telling him and the rest of the team and even the league who's boss. I don't think he held it against them, but it was just one of those things that he had to do. And I think, I'm not going to say that was the turning point, but it certainly was a bend around the curve a bit that pointed the team in the right direction. And I think reminded Thierry Henry that as great a player as he has been and he is and can be, he is still just another player on the team. And I think that had a lot to do with it. We'll see how this goes this year. But I'm looking forward to the second season. Can't come soon enough.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait as well. At the moment, Mike is on a England tour. He, of course, Andy Roxburgh, the sporting director for the club at the moment, is showing Mike Pecky Chelsea, having talks with Jose Mourinho at Arsenal, with Arsene Wenger, and a couple of other coaches of other clubs as well. I mean, this is a class in session with some of the greatest minds in the game, especially in Europe. I mean, I would salivate for an opportunity like that to talk to these people. I know you've probably had your share of greatness talking to some of the greatest coaches in club football, club soccer. What do you think he's going to learn from these men?
Well, during a conference call last week, I thought Mike Pecky said it right. He's not going to come back with a ton of crazy, incredible ideas, but if he can come up with one nugget maybe to bring to training or to the game, he'll be very, very satisfied. I think sometimes you want to see how these coaches prepare a team. Sometimes you'll see that, they do it. I do the same things here, and here. And here are things maybe that I should try or improve on. Because sometimes, you've got your own plan that you've developed as an assistant coach, as a player. And sometimes, I'm not going to say you do it in a vacuum, but, you can't see what all the other teams are doing. And I think what you're trying to do is get the best way to prepare a team for a game. Because most of the coaching for soccer is done during training. During a game, it's all up to the players to take that training and do it. So Mike is humble enough to know that if he finds a better way to do one certain thing or several things, he'll do it. He'll bring home whatever he can. It'll be interesting to see what he takes from England.
Absolutely. And talking about some of these moves that have been made, Bobby Convy gets traded to the Red Bulls from Toronto FC. Midfield help was probably the biggest question mark, or at least the midfield I felt was kind of a question mark. Not saying that Tim Cahill can't do a job or Peggy Luyendula can't do a job, but obviously you'd like to think that the Red Bulls, their number one main concern was, of course, feeding the strikers. While Luyendula was put into that central midfield attacking role by Mike Pecky in the Chicago game, Convy now comes in, and I'm assuming he'll be playing either behind the strikers or maybe as a left-wing midfielder. More fuel to the fire, hopefully. Do you think this will be a big help, or do you think the Red Bulls need a little more in midfield?
Well, I learned something about I hate to use a cliche from another sport. They say you could never have enough pitching. I say you could never have enough midfielders or depth, for that matter, in soccer. And what Conley gives the Red Bulls is more depth either on the left side of midfield or at left back. You have to remember Roy Miller, who has been signed for the 2014 season, missed the stretch run because of an Achilles problem. And if everything goes according to plan, he's going to be gone from the Red Bulls for a good month. Yes, I know MLS is having a two-week break from games, but you want to have players who could push other players, whether it's Conley pushing Johnny Steele or Roy Miller in midfield or on defense, respectively, or someone who is in form. And I understand why he was brought to the team. He's not a kid anymore. He's 30 years old, but I think he's going to give the team a lot more depth. And who knows, maybe he becomes a regular or a starter.
Absolutely. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen during the I'm assuming they're going to be going down to Disney World for the Disney Soccer Showcase. We'll have to wait and see if that's official or not. But some other moves that were made, of course, Brandon Barkwidge is no longer on the club because they've given some good contracts to Kosuke Kimura. How do you feel that back line is going to be? Even Roy Miller has that new deal. Let me go to Roy Miller for a minute. We've seen Roy Miller under Hans Bakke. He's had good moments. He's had bad moments. And when the bad moments come, you know it's all hands on deck because he seems to just self-destruct. But he self-destructed, I mean, Pekka fixed him.
Well, Pekka did the right thing by sitting him down, by letting him go to his national team for an international friendly so he wouldn't have to put up with the boos from the fans and the media after he made that bonehead play in San Jose. And since he came back, though, he played very, very well. I mean, I was one of the more critical writers about Roy Miller's decision-making in that game, but I will be the first to be online to say that, in line, I should say, that, he played excellently when he was healthy. And, in fact, you could argue that it was his some of the best soccer he's played during his tenure with the Red Bulls. So I look for him to continue that. Sometimes you get a brain fart, and that one was a big one.
Yes, it was. That's probably the biggest brain fart I've ever seen. But I'll tell you, I'm very happy to see Roy Miller actually resigning. Obviously, there were rumors going around that he might have gone back to Costa Rica and play in the local league, but glad to see that he did resign with the Red Bulls, and we'll see what happens in this season before and after he comes back with the Costa Rican national team. Fabian Espíndola, while I think he did have a successful season, he was kind of hot and cold here and there, and he didn't look comfortable at all. I haven't heard him actually coming back with the Red Bulls. I know that he's out in the reentry draft. I don't know if anyone's picked him up yet, but do you see him making a return to the club, or do you think he wants to go somewhere else within MLS or back down in South America?
I just think he'll be back with the team unless it's going to be at a tremendously lower salary. And the reentry draft, the second stage, is Wednesday, so we'll see what happens if another team picks him up. Was very inconsistent this year. One game he'd look like a world beater, and then the next game he'd be maybe trying hard, but not doing as well as you'd like to see him. And it's funny, before the season, I was telling people Espíndola had never scored more than 10 goals in a season, and he's not going to replace the numbers that Kenny Cooper had. And I hate to say that I was right because I was hoping he'd prove me wrong, but I think if you're going to have a striker up front next to Thierry Henry, you want to have someone who gets into double figures because the midfield that the Red Bulls have, outside of Tim Cahill, and we could do an entire show about how well he played, aren't necessarily going to fill the net. So you needed someone to be your big-time striker, and Espíndola did not fill the role. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, so do we see maybe Tim Cahill pairing up with Henry half the time, or maybe Bradley Wright Phillips pairing up with Henry? Because it seems to me that Bradley Wright Phillips is a good fit with Henry as the second striker, as well as Cahill being in there, whether he's behind Henry in the midfield or attacking up front. It just, to me, it seems like one of those two is going to fit with him nicely.
I think we're going to see both. That's my gut feeling. I think Mike Pecky is, because this is going to be a long season for the Red Bulls, when you've got the league, you've got the Open Cup, you've got CONCACAF Champions League as well, and I think he's going to do some rotation in terms of getting Wright Phillips up front and even Cahill up front. I got a strange feeling Cahill will never say no to rest, but I think we'll see Cahill as a forward and as a midfielder, and I think we'll see Luyendula as a midfielder when Pecky thinks he'll make the biggest impact in the middle of the park as well, too. So to answer your question, yes, I think they're both going to play up front at times and play a lot up front.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. And, of course, the CONCACAF Champions League, their first time in the group stage, obviously second time in the tournament. The last time was back in 2009. They were, at the time in the qualifying round, losing to W Connection on goal aggregate. But this time, I got a funny feeling it's going to be a little different. They're going to have two home games, two road games. I just got this funny feeling. I think Mike Pecky is going to do well in this.
Would not be surprised. I think they know that what they have to do. They have to build the team for the long haul, because we're talking, 40, maybe 50, at least 50 games. And that's a lot, and would not be surprised if they get into the quarter, into the 2015 quarterfinals. It all depends on the group that they get. If they're going to get stuck with a Mexican team, it's going to be difficult. If they get stuck with, if they have a Central American team and a Caribbean team, it won't be as difficult. I don't want to use the word easier, because we all know what happened with the W Connection in 2009. And yes, that Red Bull team was a pretty awful team. But I prefer to stay away from Mexican teams in the first round of the CONCACAF Champions League.
Absolutely. Actually, to be honest with you, Michael, I'm rooting for the Red Bulls to be drawn with the Canadian representative, either Toronto, Montreal, or Vancouver, so they don't have to take a really long flight down the Central and or the Caribbean twice, if you know what I mean.
Right. I understand. And we still have to find out who the Canadian winner will be. But they'll have the Amway series in the spring. Amway Championship.
Absolutely. Oh, yep, that's fine. Absolutely. So far, I'll agree with you that for next year, I think the depth has been answered up to a point. Maybe they need more depth. We'll find out what happens. More trades to be made, more signings to be made, obviously. When the winter window opens, we'll find out who might be available. But I guess the question is this. Do you think they have enough right now to possibly go all the way to MLS Cup and maybe even have a good run in the U.S. Open Cup?
No, I don't think so. I still, even though we were talking about, Wright Phillips and Cahill playing up front, I'd still love to see, unless Wright Phillips, gives them 10, 15 goals, I'd still like to see another forward up front and see what happens with Holgersen in the back. I think when he is paired with Olave, it gives them an interesting 1-2 punch in the back there, one who's very, a defender who's very physical and someone who is relies on more finesse, even though Holgersen is quite big, quite tall. But I'd like to see the team get more depth I really would. And if that means not necessarily getting a big name DP, and you're going to get maybe two quote-unquote lesser name players who could fill the bill, maybe that's the best way to go, because it's a little more of a gamble when you have one big player. And I know that Mike Pecky and Andy Roxborough have said it's got to be the right fit for the team. So sometimes it's better to go for the lower rung if you can't find the right DP.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How surprised are you that Andy Roxburgh, with only one full year in an MLS single-entity salary cap league, that he's, I'll be honest, I think he's gotten things right. How surprised are you that Roxburgh has done, I would say, a very good first-year job?
I'm not surprised at all. I've known Andy since 1988. I met him at the National Soccer Coaches Convention of America convention way back then, and he struck me as a very, very sharp individual. He was the Scotland coach way back then. And I think what it came down to is he did his homework. He also had a great staff under him, led by Ricardo Campos, who knows all those rules better than anyone on the team. And he relied on his people, but he also did his homework and worked hard at learning the ropes as quickly as he could. He did not come in, let's say, as Eric's predecessor, Eric Soler, who wanted to let the world know that he knew everything when he didn't know everything. And I'll tell you this, I've been covering this league since before the first ball was kicked, and I still struggle with all these rules, new rules, things that get changed and whatnot. So, granted, I know I don't make my living making decisions on following these MLS rules. Sometimes they make me hit my head against the wall, but I think Andy came in very, very humble. And here's someone who's had a tremendous amount of success in Europe as a coach and as an administrator with UEFA. And I just wish he was younger so he could have many, many more years with the Red Bulls, because, he did get it right.
Yeah, he really did. Gerard Houllier goes on an MLS internet show, or at least a live video show, and talks to someone asking questions about Mike Pecky, and he says that Mike Pecky's got a three-year deal when, in fact, it's only two. So I like to think Houllier owes Mike 1 year extra.
I guess he's allowed to forget that, or maybe he scrambled in an option year by accident. Not the end of the world. As long as Houllier doesn't try to foist another Juninho on the team this year, I don't mind about him making a mistake on Mike Pecky's contract.
I know, but I like to point those things out. But anyway, Luis Robles is getting a raise. And, I have to say, I thought he looked a little shaky at the start of the season this past year. But as everything was going on, he's just been fantastic. Handled too many penalties against the Red Bulls, unfortunately. But he was able to make some stellar penalty stops. And he's just been making save after save just from the seat of his pants. Do you think he's going to last another couple of years for the Red Bulls? Because we know Ryan Mara is not far behind.
Well, he might not be able to play every second of every game like he did last year just because of all the games that they have. And, yes, as you said, Ryan Mara is raring to go. Saying that, what impressed me most about the Robles this year was that he didn't necessarily have to make a lot of saves in some games, but when he had to make the big save, he did, to keep the team in the game. When they had a 1-0 lead or when the score was tied, and then the Red Bulls would come down and they'd perhaps score a number of minutes later. And that's the mark of a good goalkeeper. And I give Robles a lot of credit, because a lot of criticism was heaped on him early on. He made some bad decisions that resulted in goals, that resulted in lost points or no points at all. And he managed to get that whatever that monkey off his back, Andy was superb the second part of the year. I mean, he was as good, if not better, than any other goalkeeper in the league, particularly in the second half. And the fact that he played every minute of every game, only one other goalkeeper in club history had done that before him. That was Tim Howard in 2001. And even that year was cut short because of the 9/11 situation, because of the air travel had been disrupted. Howard, mm-hmm. I believe, played in 26 games, and Robles played in 34. So that's not an easy achievement to do as a goalkeeper, no matter what league you're in, playing every minute.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I want to ask you two quick questions, obviously. Number one is, Jason Kreis in 2015 will be managing the brand new New York City FC team. Not doubting Kreis at all, but do you think, can he handle New York City? That's the big question I have.
I think he'll be able to, because this isn't like the Knicks, Rangers, Yankees, Mets type of pressure. There is pressure here because they want to win now. In fact, without sounding like I'm trying to advertise a story, but a few hours ago I posted a story talking to Bill Manning, the president of Real Salt Lake, and Chris Wingert, a left fullback with the team, two people from Long Island who know the pressure of what it's like to play in the New York City area. They talked about that pressure, and they said that Jason Kreis will be able to handle it. I agree with him. I think he'll know what to do. I think his big challenge over the next year is probably going crazy, not coaching a team. Saying that, I think he's going to put together a team. You know, maybe a couple players from Manchester City, players from perhaps South America, a couple more players from Europe, and then build from there on from the expansion draft, which is only 360 days away or so.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We'll see what happens there. And, of course, finally, MLS-wise, I'm going to try and be as kind as I can, but I don't think it's going to come out that way. The embarrassment that Chivas USA has become to this league because – you know, they were the poster child of having two teams in one stadium, two teams in one city, and unfortunately more problems seem to come out of there, whether it be the Real Sports HBO special, even though they got Mauro Rosales in the reentry draft from Seattle. I don't know if that's going to be enough or if there is enough to save this team, period.
You know, I'm not going to get into what all they did wrong. I think that's been said very well elsewhere. But it seems like they've done just about everything possibly wrong that they can do wrong. And you just wonder, if the die has been cast, can they get those fans back? And not that they had a humongous following to begin with. I mean, I think in the beginning they wanted to get Chivas fans. Well, you know, let's face it, there are many more Mexican fans than Chivas fans in Southern California. And the fact that they started off on the wrong foot, Bob Bradley put them back on the right foot, and then they just fell off the cliff. Yes, it has been very, very embarrassing for so many reasons on and off the field. I mean, I would love to see them sell the team to David Beckham's group and have him move to Miami and get them out of there. I just don't know if they could solve the headaches that they've caused. Incredible, simply incredible. It's funny because of all, you know, being in New York, we hear about the Red Bulls haven't done this well and that well through the years. That's child's play compared to what's happened with Chivas USA. Child's play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Michael, thank you so much again. Happy holidays, happy new year, and can't wait to see you in the next season of Major League Soccer. I'll talk to you soon, and once again, thank you very much, and happy holidays.
You're welcome. Happy holidays to you and your family as well.
Thank you, Michael. It's Michael Lewis, Big Apple Soccer, tropigold.com as well, as New York Newsday, writing for soccer for the New York Newsday newspaper out in Long Island, Queens and Brooklyn as well. Well, everyone, one more show before I go on the big two-week break. One more show before Christmas comes. I know the Jewish guy is trying to keep on going here till there is no more in 2013, and that's fine by me. I hope you guys don't mind. But definitely, you have to say with the New York Red Bulls, it's going to be an interesting off season. Once again, they got Bobby Convy in a trade with Toronto FC for draft picks. They've upgraded certain positions. They have given raises to certain players in certain positions. And when it comes to the U.S. in this upcoming World Cup, it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen. But definitely, it's going to be one of those moments where it's going to be exciting. So, one second, please. Sorry about that. You know, I have the hotline. I get these interesting deals going on in MLS. I get these interesting things going on. I mean, I can't let you guys know what's going on, because if I let you guys know what's going on, obviously it's a rumor, and I can't give you rumors. I can't do that. It's just one of those things that can't happen. It's just one of those things that just that you just can't, I can't divulge. So that's why the phone call happened. And it's one of those things that can't happen. So anyway, it's one of those things, once again, that we just can't have happen here, is divulging secrets to the listening audience. I know you want to know. I know you want to know. But I'm here to tell you, nothing is true unless I make sure it's true, because I am not a gossip monger. No, no, no. There is no way, no how, no possibility you're going to get me to divulge an up-and-coming rumor on who's coming on this show or what I'm learning at the moment. I'm going to make sure that the facts are concrete before I inform you guys. And that is the truth. What I can tell you is that there will be one more show before the 2013 season is over. And then it's a two-week break, and then we restart everything in January, and that date will be January 14th of 2014. So this coming Monday will be the last show of 2013, and then when 2014 rolls along, January the 14th will be the very first show of that calendar year. And it's a big one because it's the World Cup. Got some big plans for the World Cup this upcoming June 2014. Hopefully we'll have guests on that will be available, that will be joining me, discussing every single match in the World Cup, as well as talking about the U.S. national team, and let's see how far they can go. Because I think it'll be something exciting and something special when we see who is going to be on this World Cup roster for the USA, and let's see if they can get out of the group and possibly get past the second round, because it all depends on who will they face, either Belgium or Russia or South Korea or Algeria. That is if they get out of the group. And we shall see who will be getting out of that group in H, so the USA will play against them. And once again, as we discuss what's going on in Major League Soccer and American soccer, it's the tons of deals going on. Once again, Eddie Johnson leaving Seattle, heading in a deal, which I understand, and I could be wrong, but I just want to make sure that I have my facts correctly, because the last time I checked, I understand that it's a DP deal with DC United. Now, if I'm incorrect, we'll find out what's going to happen. But with MLS transfers here on Twitter, he says, hearing the Gilberto signing has helped another MLS side with an ambition to sign a young player from Brazil. And, of course, Toronto FC has Gilberto on their team. And congratulations to them for a big signing there to get ready for the 2014 season. But once again, this is the situation where so many teams want to make big signings, bring in players who have done well on other teams, and at the same time, seeing if they can improve their season in a big way. And once again, Eddie Johnson officially with DC United. It's going to be big in 2014. As we take a look at other headlines in American soccer, and that is, of course, a lot of fun stuff going on. Latest articles here on MLS's website, of course, Dwayne De Rosario and David Faria highlights list of players up for grabs in reentry draft. We'll see what happens with Dwayne De Rosario, obviously, as he was released by DC United. We'll see what happens. Five players were taken in stage one of the reentry process. Chicago Fire have re-signed Chris Rolf. And Logan Paws also re-signed with Chicago. Portland Timbers defender David Horst was traded to Houston. And also John Thorington has opted out of the reentry draft. He is remaining with DC United. So we got ourselves a lot of interesting stuff going on. Josie Altidor for Sunderland. They defeat Chelsea 2-1 in the Capital One Cup, the League Cup. So as I understand, they'll be going to the semifinals now. But certain players also, of course, interesting enough to see what's going to happen here. Tons of players still some available to be picked up. So we'll have to wait and see. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests for tonight, my good friend Darius Shirzadi of projectgoal.org, and, of course, the legendary writer Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer, Tropigol, and of New York Newsday. Ladies and gentlemen, and once again, it's been fun hosting this show with you and you listening to everything I say. Hopefully you like what you hear. One more show to go before we say goodbye and we call it quits. But definitely, definitely very, very happy that everything is going well. I'm very happy that you're listening. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Feuerstein Fire Internet American Soccer Show. And as always, please, I beg of you to do this, as always, to please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye for now.